Hey guys, and welcome to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. The first podcast to bring you the local fishing report for Alabama's lakes and rivers, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. I'm your host, Nick Williams, and this week's show is brought to you by... Alrighty guys, welcome back to another week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report. Excited to kick things off this week, Tracy Umber up on Pickwick on the Tennessee River. And we're here today to talk about bluegill. I noticed on social media last week that Tracy had been getting on them. That's something I've been doing a little bit myself, so I figured I'd call him up. Tracy, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, Nick. How are you?
Oh, man. I won't lie. I'm a little sad that that long, cool spring is kind of tapering off. Yesterday I got bit by horseflies just trying to open my gate to go out. It's here. It may not be summer on paper, but we're getting there, at least down here in my neck of the world.
Well, that long, cool spring also brought long, just disastrous winds for us. It's been tough this year. The wind has blown just about every day. So I'm ready to see some hot, still days.
Yeah, it has been the past couple of weeks. I think last week on the show, I think that's been a recurring theme now that you mention it. Like I've had several guides in several parts of the state all mention having to get off the big water and tuck up in the little creeks and stuff like that just to try to get out of the wind, or running down the battery on their trolling motor trying to stay in place. So you're definitely right. I've been spending more time on the backwaters because my little boat, it doesn't do good. It was out there white capping on some of the bigger lakes. So you're definitely right there.
Yeah, we've had to, you know, you like to plan your trips for your customers where the fish are, but some days you just have to plan your trips where the wind is not, you know. I've fished the north side of the lake more this year than ever. I've been fortunate the fish have been there, but I don't really like fishing on the north side of the lake that much, not as much as I do other parts of the lake, but get out of this wind, you had to. But we've swapped gears now a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've swapped gears a little bit. Let the crappie do their thing, and now we're hitting the bluegill. And there's some really hot action right now.
Well, bluegill are my favorite fish to fish for. I never got the memo that as you get older, you're supposed to pursue more serious fish like bass. That's still my favorite thing to do. And now I've got a kiddo, and here in a little bit, we'll be able to take her out, and she'll be able to hold her own pole. We were actually catching some bluegill yesterday. Had the first fish fry of the year, caught some bluegill that were actually big enough to fillet. So tell me all your bluegill secrets up there. I'm curious to hear if they're different on Pickwick than down here. Down here right now, they're shallow. It seems like folks is catching them, you know, edges of lily pads. They're catching them up in the cypress knees. Like you can see beds up shallow anywhere we got sand. We don't have a lot of sand, so that can sometimes be difficult. But what's the secret up there on Pickwick?
Well, this year, I'm kind of new to the bluegill fishing on Pickwick. Just never have done it. I've only been up here about 6-7 years. So I said this year, well, you know, I need to learn something different. So I'm in the learning phases of it. And like you just said, the cypress knees have been really good. We don't have lily pads up here, or I haven't found any. But the little cattail patches around the edges of those have been really good. And I've actually found some out on the main river, out on the Tennessee River, really shallow flats. And I'm right on the edge of the river. So that's been unique. I like it out there because there's no way to get hung, you know. They're shallow. They're really shallow. Fish about a foot, foot and a half, 2 foot deep. It's been fast and furious. Up here, you liable to sit out on a bed and catch 40 or 50 before you have to move, you know. So it's been really good.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good time. 40 or 50 is a pretty good haul off the beds. And we've got some of that too on the river flats here. You can get on them, some of the sandbars that come off the river in the little backwater coves. And then you're talking about cattails. We got down here, we got frag, and especially as you get further south in the delta, if you get the tide falling out, it seems like the edges of that frag holds shellcrackers really well. And I see in some of your pictures you were catching bluegill and shellcracker. Were the shellcracker just mixed in, or you notice any spots where you were getting on more shellcracker?
Unfortunately, I haven't found a good shellcracker bed yet. Shellcracker beds are sacred and folks don't want to talk about them too much up here because we get some big ones. I heard a report the other day, a guy had some that was in the pound and a half to pound and three quarter range. And but that's all I heard from that report was how big they were. He didn't tell me where they were. So the shellcracker beds are, you know, they're pretty sacred ground up here. And just have to find those. But I did catch a few the other day mixed in with the bluegills. So I know I'm in the right area if I'm catching a few. I'll find them eventually.
Definitely. Yeah, the shellcracker, talk about them getting big like that. My wife, we were up at a place a little bit north of here. I'm not going to tell exactly where, but it's a place I don't fish all that much. But me and her were up there catching bluegill. And then next thing you know, that bobber dove under and it bent that little ultralight. And I really thought she had a bass. It ended up being a 2-pound shellcracker, biggest one I've ever seen.
Wow.
Huge shellcracker. I just so happened to have scales that day. And yeah, it was every bit of 2 pounds. They get.
So yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You
yeah.
don't want to tell your secrets either. So I'm telling you, the shellcracker, I mean, people tell you about them, but it's sort of like turkey woods, you know. They're not going to tell you where the turkeys are at. So, but the bluegill have been plentiful this year. I'm not going to say they're easy to find, but if you've seen up here, our river fluctuates. You know, they pull it down in the winter. So if you're out there fishing, this is one way. I mean, you can see remnants of old beds when the water's down. Kind of keep that in the back of your head. You know, hey, I need to come back here in the May, middle of April, first of May. And that's how I found some of these beds that I'm fishing now. Saw them in the winter and come back to them during the summer.
Have you done any looking? We had a while back, we had Steve Graziano down talking about finding the deep bluegill beds on side scan sonar. And I got a buddy out in Texas and he hammers bluegill every year and he's fishing in 10 to 20 feet of water, you know, with like a little split shot rig, dropping stuff all the way straight down to him. Have you looked around any on some of the, like where you're finding the shallow beds on them flats and it starts tapering off into the river and getting deeper? Have you poked around any in there?
I have not. I've got my Hummingbird Helix laying in the front seat right here beside me right now. Side imaging has went out on it, and it's fixing to make a trip down to Eufaula. So I haven't, over the last week or so, I haven't had the chance to try it yet, but I want to when it comes back. And, you know, just because these things are starting now, they're gonna spawn, you know, on into the summer. My son, he's a biologist, and he tells me they're going to spawn 2 to 3 times. So mm-hmm. He said, now they will move out into that deeper water like you're talking about. So I'll end up having to find some out there, I guess.
Yeah, they'll definitely spawn throughout the summer. Down here, I have seen bluegill on bed as late as October, like right before you hit deer season. So that's definitely it's a lot of fun. You get a huge opportunity. There's a big window that you can fish for them. And it's funny that you mentioned your depth finder being out. I feel like we talk so much on the show about side scan and forward facing sonar and stuff like that. And it's one of the appealing thing about bluegill is you don't need all that. You know, you can fish for them up shallow. They're in predictable places. You can find, you know, cover that you can see with your eyes, you know, weeds, lily pads, cattails, cypress knees, and you can go out there and get on them. So it's a good equal opportunity sport. If you're just bank pounding or got a kayak or a little small boat, you can get out there and get after them.
Exactly. And you don't need, you know, high dollar equipment. Get you some, I think I'm using six pound mono right now on mine. And got a little small, I think they're number 6 Aberdeen hooks and some red worms. I've been using red worms. It's messy, but I found that I can catch 5 or 6 on one worm, and crickets, you're only going to get 1 or maybe 2 on a cricket. So my boat looks like a worm bed right now. It's got worm dirt all on the bottom of it, but it'll wash out.
So. Yeah, I try to take crickets and worms when I go out, but man, and there are some days I feel like you get bit more on crickets, but the convenience factor of the worms is pretty high. Being able to reuse the same worm, and they stay on the hook better and they're easier to grab.
Sure.
Sometimes that cricket cage will embarrass you. I'll end up with a cricket on the back of my neck or in my boat, or sometimes I'll end up with a cricket everywhere but on my hook.
Oh, once those crickets get in your boat, they seem like they say to stay there and chirp, for a month before they finally decide to get out. But anyhow, no, I've just used worms, and two, either one is fine. Kids, kids love to play with crickets and worms both. So, if you can pass the time away with a kid, if they're not biting or if you hadn't found any, let them play with the crickets, let them play with the worms. So, I've actually tried something a little bit different for me this year, as fishing without a cork. I know you mentioned a while ago watching a bobber go under. I've actually been throwing up with a little, like a drop shot rig, tie my hook 12 to 24 inches according to where they're wanting to bite at, up the line with a loop knot, and then pinching pretty good size, but the number four or two number four split shots on the bottom of the line, and basically just dragging it through the beds. Mm-hmm. And for the purist that likes to feel the thump, that's pretty fun. But nothing takes place of watching a cork, just disappear.
Corks are fun, and down here you about got to have corks to stay off all the stuff on the bottom. But where it's clean, I seem like I catch more fish if I can get away with just free lining something out there. I got some ultralight rods, and I've got like some 4 pound high-vis Mr. Crappie line, and you can do really good that way. And like you said, it's a little bit more active, a little bit more fun. And it feels a little bit more sporty when you're sitting there watching that line to see it tick or go sideways. And sometimes you will feel it thump. And I have free lined bait at them. I've done, like you're talking, drop shot rigs. I've done split shot rigs. And then if I get tired of just catching numbers down here, a lot of guys like to throw on either an underspin jig for crappie or a beetle spin. And I've caught some of my biggest bluegill actually on crappie shiners, and at first it was accidental, but now if I get on places where I know there's some bigger bluegill, a big bluegill will take a crappie shiner if you put it there in front of him, and it weeds out all those little ones that swallow your hook and steal your bait. Like you'll catch some big ones if you can find some small crappie minnows.
Right. I haven't got that far into it yet, so, but I'm not opposed to it. I'm not opposed to it yet. Yeah, weeding through a good brim bed is tough because you're going to have them 2 fingers wide up the hand size. It's the first one that gets to the bait, the one that you're going to catch. And when you're on a good hot bed, it's the first fish that gets there. It's almost instant, or it has been for us up here.
Sure. Well, the big question is, once you get you a cooler full of them, are you a filleting man or are you a eat 'em whole man?
I'm a fillet guy. now my parents, they're 80 years old. I called the other day and Daddy said, "Leave me some with some bones in it." So I said, "Well, you want the skin on or skin off?" He said, "Ah, you can fillet them, but just leave the rib cage in them for me." So I done him some like that, and I scaled him a few and left them whole for him. So
yeah,
Mama, she'll fry them up. They'll fry them up crisp. We actually had some last night, me and my son. We went and caught a mess. We hadn't had dinner yet, so I said, "Heck, let's just eat some fresh fish." So we filleted some, fried them up fresh last night. Boy, you talking about good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've gotten used to it. I wanted to keep a lot and have a big fry and put them in the freezer, and I've gotten now, within the past couple of years, where for me and my wife, I want to catch about 6, and I want them to be big. And I just fillet them, but I've eaten a lot of them that were whole down here. That's a big thing. People want to eat the tail off of them, and I've seen some people fillet them, but cut the tails off and fry the tails separate, and they'll be sitting there eating fish tails like appetizers, sitting there drinking beer and sitting on their docks and waiting for the rest of the fish.
There you go. I'm not a big brim tail eater. I love a catfish tail, but I'm not big on brim. But my granddaddy used to love them. That's the way he wanted them whole and he wanted the tail on. So,
yeah.
But it's a fun sport, and it's a great way to introduce kids to fishing, because you know, a kid, if you're out there having to work for a bass or a crappie, and you, some days you have to work to catch one or two or five. Graham's not like that, you know. My niece came over yesterday, and she had some of her college friends with us. Y'all want to go fishing with us? No, no, fishing's boring. You know, my niece told him, said, no, it's not boring with Uncle Tracy. Said, he catching lots of them, lots of brim. So, you know, you can keep a kid interested on a brim bed. You really can. Yeah, and when they get tired, take them in. Don't just sit there and make them once you catch 100 more, you know. keep them wanting to come back.
Yeah, that's, man, I tell you, talk about getting tired of it. So my little girl, she's about to be a year old, and we've made a couple trips this spring when the weather was nice, but I don't think we went more than about 200 yards from the boat ramp, because once she decided it was time to go, like, it's in the best interest of all parties, just head on back to the house, just wrap it up, pull the lines in.
Well, it is, and even when a kid gets up, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, and when they get whiny and fussy, hey, they've had all of it they want. You know, you may have caught 100. But they've had all they want, and there's no sense in ruining a kid from the great sport of fishing, in my opinion.
So, that's it.
When they get tired, let them dictate how long. And if they want to stay all day, you know, if you can, stay there with them. Stay there with them. It's a fun sport and a good sport to get kids into, because just about everybody started out catching bluegill at some point in their life. That's where their fishing career starts. I know mine did. Like you were talking about earlier, hopping from pond to pond, and either getting permission to fish in your neighbor's pond or something, or sneaking in there and fishing it, you know. We've all done it as kids.
Yeah. No,
it's amazing how the older you get, the more you want to revert back to your youthful ways, you know, going back to the bluegill. Now, I don't care nothing about sneaking in a pond anymore. I'm too old and fat to be running from these boats, but it's pretty fun, the bluegill portion of it.
It's funny you mention that. I've definitely noticed that it's the young and the old who bluegill fish, and that's one of my last memories I have of my great-grandfather, is him sitting out on a dock up on the Tom Bigbee River fishing for bluegill. And it's probably one of the last fishing trips, if not the last fishing trip that he ever went on. And he was just as happy as I think I ever saw him, just sitting there pulling in bluegill, just with a little Zebco and a box of red worms next to him.
Right. I have found that I do a lot of casting for crappie, and I'm hooked up with Trico rods. And they're kind of an expensive rod, but I've actually rigged them up for brim fishing. And that little drop shot rig on that Trico is so sensitive. I'm actually using 10-pound braid with a 6-pound fluoro leader. Mm. And it's kind of a high dollar rig for brim fishing. But I'm telling you, you can feel that little 2-finger brim. You can feel him when he smokes it. Don't miss many with it. So, there's a plug for one of my sponsors.
There we go. Well, there's no shame in my game. I've got a little bit of money sunk in my bluegill rods, and I really hesitate to say how much money I've spent once I started getting into fly fishing for them. And I know you've been getting into that a little bit. What's your first impressions?
I had a ball. I went the other day. I bought a fly rod, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago to take to Colorado trout fishing. Didn't know if we were going to need it. Didn't know how to fly fish, but glad I bought the rod, because you couldn't have caught trout any other way out there. So I've used it off and on, but over the last 10 years, I bet you I haven't even looked at it. So last week, I decided to pull it out. I even had to go to Bass Pro. And I bought some little old gnat-looking things. And as you can tell, I am not a fly fisherman. So I don't know the terms, the lingo, but I don't even know what size line I had on them. Or my tippet. I don't know what size tippet I had. But it actually caught fish, and I had a ball. So you could cast that thing up into the beds and basically watch that line tick. And when it started running, you had it.
Yeah, fly fishing for bluegill is perfect. I know I've got a lot of friends who get into the bass down here, but to me, the coolest thing about fly fishing is like with trout out west, you know, they're bug eaters. They eat little bitty bugs, and then bluegill, you know, you look at them, they got little bitty mouths. It's not like a bass. And being able to throw something small that they can eat, when I first started fly fishing for them, I was like, man, this is perfect. Like, where's this been all my life?
Oh, yeah.
It really works well, but I warn you, if you get into it, like last night, I was up late. I tied a half a dozen little small flies. And if you ever go down that rabbit hole, if there's a way back up that slippery slope, I have not found it yet.
I enjoyed it. I'll just put it that way. I'm not running out buying new line or tippets or anything just yet, but I did enjoy it. Now, I wouldn't want to do it with two or three people in the boat. I'm not that brave into it yet. So, but now you're talking about brim eating small stuff. Of course, I don't know. Do y'all have the cicadas down there yet? Have they faded y'all?
Yeah, they're starting to show up. I don't think the apocalypse is here. We get them every year, and I live right here on the river, so I kind of get to where I tune them out. But I'll be talking with my friends on my back porch in the evening, and they'll be like, "Dude, what in the world is that?" And they'll be, you give it another month, there'll be 1,000 of them out there.
Okay, there's a million of them up here now. It sounds like a war zone up here. You can't think straight. There's so many of them. And it's all day long. They start at daylight and they go right on in to just after the sun goes down, they'll shut up for a little bit. But what I have noticed, you was talking about the brim having a small mouth. These brim are feeding like crazy on these cicadas up here. Their guts are slap full of them. The ones I've been cleaning, just about every brim I've cleaned has cicada eyes and wings in it. It's amazing. So if you can find the hatch or find where the cicadas are in the trees hanging over the water, and I got to putting two and two together, and most of the places that I go have trees hanging over the water, and I know these cicadas are falling out and the brim are attacking them. So if you can kind of match the hatch, you know, which a cricket, you know, looks more like a cicada than a worm does, but they are feeding on heavily up here.
Yeah, we get every year the big event people look forward to down here, and you'll see some older fellas out here with a fly rod, is we have a big mayfly hatch. And I don't know. I'm sure there's an entomologist, a more serious fly fisherman, that could tell you exactly what type of mayfly. I just know you get these big mayflies that hatch, and like you said, they'll be on the cypress limbs low over the water, and there'll be a million of them. And I've had coming back late at night from fishing trips, when they get out on the river good, I have had so many of them that I had to wear sunglasses at night just to keep them out of my eyes. And I'm like pulling my shirt up, breathing through my mouth. And there were so many of them in the boat that the next day I went to go get my rod out of the boat, and it smelled like roadkill. And it smelled like I had a dead possum in my boat. There were so many bugs in there.
Yeah, we have those same mayflies up here. I was talking to an older gentleman the other day about this brim fishing bluegill, and that's what he was saying. When the mayfly hatch, he said, "Don't quit on them just because the full moon came and gone, came and went." He said, "When that mayfly hatch," he said, "you need to be right back out there." And he said he has even taken a bigger rod or longer rod, or like a 14 or 16-foot crappie rod, and slap the trees where the mayflies were, get them to fall into the water, and he said it'll turn the brim on. I'd never heard that, but and he said once the mayflies start hitting the water, he said you pitch in there, and he said it's on. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a lot of
he was
fun.
telling me the truth or not. Yeah.
I have seen it. I have seen those limbs, and you can sit there and throw a, you know, piece of driftwood or something at it to shake it and make the bugs fall off and start flying and hitting the water. And you'll see sometimes you'll be out on the water in the morning when it's calm. I've been fishing one spot And then you start hearing fish hit, and you can look 200 yards down the river and, see the ripples. Like then you'll see the bush, and you can see from 100, 200 yards away, you can see that that bush has enough bugs on it that, like, it's kind of weighed down, drooping, turned colors, and you can just see fish hitting under the surface. And you sit there and you motor on over there and you start catching fish. And especially when they're hitting popwater, there's a local guy, Leon Cumby, and he ties the spookiest, like, most realistic looking mayfly, topwater fly that you've ever seen. And they sell like hotcakes, and they catch fish, and every now and then you'll get surprised. I've caught catfish and I've caught bass up under those mayfly limbs that are doing the same thing. They're just eating the bugs that fall in the water.
Yesterday we did catch four channel cats that were right in amongst the bream beds. Anywhere from a pound and a half up to, we had one that's about 3 pounds. And that's a pretty good tug on an ultralight for 6 pound test.
Yeah, I caught about a 3 pound chain pickerel last week fishing up in the Cypress Knees with red worms. And I'm surprised he didn't cut the line. I had that long Aberdeen hook is what saved me. He was just barely hooked, so he couldn't bite the line. But that took a few minutes to coax him in on 4 pound test, and that ultralight bowed up in a U.
Be ready for, and I've caught a couple of bass. Those bass, they'll cruise the bream beds as well. So be ready for a tug. And these, I tell you, if these bluegill and shellcracker baited up to 4 or 5 pounds on the river here, I don't know that you could land them. They would be the baddest fish in the water. They pull. They're amazing.
They're strong fish, and they're eager to bite, and they're a lot of fun to put new people on, and they kind of come in good, like you were saying. Once the crappie bite, once that spawn starts to kind of fade out, the bluegill are getting right. But tell me before we start wrapping up, folks, looking forward to this weekend and the coming weekends. What's the next thing you're looking for up there? What's going to be the next big bite usually?
Next big bite after this bluegill stuff. Our crappie is in a funk right now, in between going to the banks, coming off the banks from the spawn. Some of our crappie spawn deep, so they don't really go to the banks, but they're still in a funk. But when the weather starts heating up, our brush tops and stake beds in deeper water, they will load up. And we've already started seeing some of the smaller crappie load up on them. And when I say load up, I'm talking 50 to 100 fish on one little old brush top. So it's fixing to get really good. That's going to be really hot. But we'll start pushing some minnows, and we'll even do some live scoping. If we can coax them out of those trees, pitching up to it, the tops and stake beds, we'll live scope out of that tops in 12, 15 foot of water. Most of what my trip is going to be this summer is going to be pushing minnows up over the tops, but it'll be good.
It
It'll be
definitely
good.
it sounds like a good time. Well, Tracy, I appreciate having you on today. Glad you've been getting on the bluegill. It's always a good time. If folks want to look at booking a trip with you, what's a good place to get in touch with you?
Go on Facebook, Tracy Umber Fishing, or you can give me a call or shoot me a text. Text is probably the easiest way to get up with me. It's 662-574-0649.
There we go, guys. Y'all definitely check out Tracy if y'all are looking to get on some crappie up there on Pickwick. And Tracy, once again, I appreciate having you on the show. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks. Offer numerous items to help get your project done right the first time. They carry a variety of different panel profiles and your choice of colors and gauges with all the matching trim and accessories. They also offer a full line of hardware items and post-frame building design. Their friendly and knowledgeable sales representatives are always willing to help answer any questions or concerns you may have. Contact them with any questions or to get a free estimate today. Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks, your metal roofing headquarters. Alrighty, guys, we're back, and this time we're checking in with Peter Jordan down in South Alabama. Peter owns the Lost Angler Fly Shop, and he's here today to talk with us a little bit about creek wading. Peter, what you been getting into up in them creeks?
Oh man, this is just such a wonderful time of year when you've got water temps are still nice and cool. You got really happy, active fish that are chewing on everything that moves, and you can really get in there early in the morning and enjoy a really good topwater bite for bass and panfish. And the water's still cool enough that you can also enjoy really good crappie fishing. So in a lot of our creeks in South Alabama through Central Alabama, it's been a fairly, not super dry spring, but fairly dry for the past few weeks. And a lot of our creeks are clearing up really well. So if you've got access to a creek, and we've kind of discussed on previous episodes how to access your creeks in Alabama. And if you can get in there and get to wading around and just learning how to work that structure, understanding how current moves around log jams and rocks or whatever else may be there, you can really pick up on some extremely active, hungry fish that are more than happy to take your fly. Or if you're not fly fishing, they're super happy to take spinners, crankbaits, and the whole nine yards right now. So one of the big things that I look for is this time of year in our creeks, they're slower to get on the bed or to spawn. Okay? So these fish are really reacting really hard to crayfish imitations, to salamander imitations, to panfish imitations, like little brim imitations, because they are on these bass in these creeks are on high alert against anything that's going to rob their beds right now. So if I can get to that area, let's say I've got a fast-moving creek and I've got a laydown or just something that's creating a back eddy, and I can get in there with those imitations, it's going to be gangbusters right now. It's going to get smacked, and you're going to get that attention from fish you've been hoping for. So it's a really good way to get new people into fly fishing or into fishing in general, because you're walking, you're going, you're constantly moving, and you're fishing to not individual fish per se, but to a general area. And because of the current in a creek, it really concentrates fish and makes them much easier to target.
It's definitely a, you talk about it being good for beginners. I love it as I've been learning to fly fish. I've got some creeks over here in Escambia County and Baldwin County, and then last week I spent some time in one in Mobile County, and I love that you can get into, multiple species. Like in one trip, I was getting into chain pickerel, getting into bass, getting into shell crackers, getting into bluegill, getting into long-eared sunfish. Like you never know. You find a little log, a little hiding spot, undercut bank, and something's hiding up in there, and you just don't know what it is.
Oh yeah, totally. And the great thing about it is because these fish are used to having food move past their face really quickly, they don't examine it real hard. They're just going to go ahead and give it a smack and a whack. And they're just going to be on top of it. They're very aggressive. And one of my favorite things about most of these creeks is they're filled with spotted bass. And spotted bass are, they occupy the same ecological niche that you might see smallmouth doing in other places, or if you're trout fishing, kind of doing what brown trout will do. And they're very aggressive, extremely hard fighters. They don't jump, wish they did, but they don't. And they will just bulldog down, and they will handily outfight any largemouth, that's for sure. And so they are a ton of fun. But one thing I would caution our friends that wade these creeks, these little smaller creeks are very kind of fragile little ecosystems. So if you do want to take home some fish for supper, just grab one or two, man. Don't limit out. That little creek takes a long time to recover from. If you fish it hard and take fish home, it takes a long time for it to recover.
Sure. There's definitely too in South Alabama. I have found there's a wide variety of creeks. Like I guess as far as the nutrient levels and the bottom type and stuff like that. Like I've gotten into some creeks that were mucky, and then I've gotten into some that were super sandy and pebbly. And those creeks especially seem to me to fish more like what you have up in North Alabama, where you have the rock, where it seems
Yeah.
like there's less food and fish are
Yeah.
hungrier. Like clearer
Yeah.
water, cleaner water, less of a nutrient load, and harder to fish because they're shallow, and about the time you see them, they see you too.
Yeah, you're definitely gonna want to make sure. What a good rule of thumb is when you get to these little creeks, you're right. And they're blackwater creeks. A lot of them down here are spring-fed creeks, so they're very clear. The cool thing about them, because they are spring-fed, they have a very predictable temperature range that they're going to stay in. You get what I mean? They're very predictable in that. So they're going to stay in that same temperature range. They're going to be easy to manage. But what you want to do to be more successful is you want to get in your creek and you want to move upstream, because these fish are going to face up into the current. So they're going to put their nose into the current. So if you're walking from downstream upstream and you're throwing your lure, your fly up to them and it's coming back past them, they're not pointing in your direction. They're pointing away from you. So as your lure comes by them or your fly comes by them, that's the natural place that they're looking for their bait to come from. It's being swept down. So they're focusing forward. But if you go downstream, especially in these little blackwater creeks, it can be a lot. They can be much more spooky because they're facing your direction. Also, as you wade in these sandy creeks, we get a lot of sediment load that's going to build up in the water. And when these fish are going, man, why did it get all dingy real fast? It's going to put them down. So we want to work upstream as best we can. So that's going to help a lot. So in those spookier places, it does help. And just like you talked about, it is less nutrient rich. So what that means is these fish are much more likely to go out and hit that prey item coming by. So because they just don't have as many opportunities.
Yeah, that's been my experience. Is some of the murkier streams and they're warmer, they're not spring fed, and those fish seem to be a little less eager than the ones who were sitting there, I guess, trying to eat pine straw and sandstone. Those
well,
fish
it's not
seem to
just
play
that.
Ball.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Those little creeks have a tremendous load of minnows, and there's a lot more life than what you might think. But the advantage is these fish have a cooler water that they're going to be in. It's much cooler, so they have much more energy. And this faster running water is much more oxygenated. So these fish have a higher energy level. And these fish, on average, are going to be a lot more willing to go a further distance to hit your fly. So that's really good, too. So, yeah, it is a matter of scarcity. But also, too, imagine now you've got athletes that are used to that fast running current, right? And they are primed and ready to go. And we've got they've got the air conditioning turned down, so they're super comfy. And we got extra oxygen in the room. They're going to be ready to rock. So these are very, very aggressive fish in general.
It's nice too, like you were talking about with the creeks being spring fed. It's heating up quick. We had a long cool, like you were talking about, dry spring, but as it starts heating up a lot, you know, last year when there were water temperatures where I was at surface temps in the 90s out on the big lake, you could get back in those little creeks and those, like you said, it was more consistent and those fish were at a temperature where they were definitely more hungry.
Yeah, totally. And there's a lot, also, too, there's a lot less stress on that fish when you catch it and bring it to hand. So that's another great thing about it. It's less stressful to those fish to deal with that. Another thing that you might want to think about is when you're in those little creeks is, let's say you're a daddy like you and I are, and you've got youngins. If you've got youngins that are wanting to come fish with you, my favorite part is as long as you walk upstream, oh, they can play and have a good time. It helps you get your kids introduced to the great outdoors in a way that helps them beat the heat and just lets them play and have fun. So that's another great thing I like too. Clear water, sandy bottoms, and a great place for kids to be kids.
Sure. Yeah, you can definitely, you don't have to worry about them falling out of the boat, and you can kind of see what's going on around you a little bit better in those sandy creeks than you can on the stained water. The
Oh, yeah.
Only real issue that I've run into this year, I was going to pick your brain on this a little bit. So, you know, with South Alabama being culturally what it is, with your tubers and your river rats, and, you know, I count myself among the people who like to enjoy a cold beverage, but I also pack my cold beverage out, and unfortunately there's people who don't. So
yeah, always take good, yeah, you're right, always put shoes on your youngins, that's a fact. And you too, by the way, put on some good sandals, protect that bottom.
So that's what I was going to ask you. I have tried everything that I can think of without getting into specialty shoes. And what's your recommendations? Like I fish a lot in flip flops and sandals, but you end up getting stuff up under there. You end up with, you know, pebbles stuck in your sandals.
No, I hate to say it. You're going to have to spend a little bit of money. There's two things that I really love. I either use my wading boots that I have for my waders. Because like fly fishing, we don't have like, normally we don't do boot foot like you might do for your hunt and stuff. And we have neoprene socks that we'll wear with them so that when we're not wading, you get what I mean? So when we're not in waders, we can still use these boots. And that neoprene helps keeping crap from getting in there. And your wading boots can be fairly expensive. But if you want a less expensive way to go, they sell these at Academy. You can order them here at the shop. We have neoprene wading boots, and they have a good rubber bottom. and you're out 50, 60 bucks. And they're going to keep sand from getting in there. It's going to make your whole day of waiting that much more comfortable. And you're just going to be able to just truck and eat up some miles and have a great day. So that is, if you're going to spend a little extra money, spend 50, 60 bucks, get a good pair of neoprene wading boots with a good hard rubber sole and get after it.
That's what I was hoping to hear you say. I think they call them, I think when I looked them up, they were flats boots is what they called those neoprene boots with the, they didn't have the felt soles or the studs or anything.
Right.
Yeah, I need to get a pair because after a mile or so, kicking rocks out of your shoes gets a little old, especially when you're sitting there in
It's
current
tough.
and trying not to fall into water.
It's tough. And you can buy them in smaller sizes. So let's say you want to get your kids into it, you can do that. And you can do the smaller sizes for them because if they're kicking rocks out of their shoes just like you are, their enjoyment of the day goes down. The faster their enjoyment of the day goes down, less time you get to spend on the water.
That's it. Well, outside of the creeks, I know you're right there on the bay where the fresh water changes to salt, and I feel bad for all the guys with DCNR who got to keep the fish on the right side of the causeway to keep them legal. But what's going down on the inshore world?
Inshore has been pretty good. I will say this, redfish are in a transition period right now. They're here today, gone tomorrow. We've had a whole lot of wind in the bay. So it's kind of chopped up the bay a little bit. And when we get a lot of chop and wind in the bay, it silts it out a lot. If you are looking to sight fish redfish, you're going to have to kind of look towards places that are very well sheltered, right? So say maybe instead of doing Fort Morgan on the inside of the bay, you might instead do Little Lagoon. Or let's say another good thing you want to look for is when you're out there, if you're in lower Alabama, look for areas with hard sand bottoms. Okay? Even if you've got chop, that hard sand's not going to get picked up and moved around like a silty bottom will. Let's say you got kind of a muddy bottom, got that gumbo mud, and it's really silty, right? If you've got that, the particles on that bottom are so tiny that the least bit of wave action is going to stir it around and mud it up really badly. Okay. That being said, these redfish are in transition. They're kind of moving from being in their normal place in the flats. They're spending more time in channels. Flounders start to move in right now. So if you're around creek mouths that have good grass on the outside, you can definitely fish those areas. Just remember, you want to be on the outside of a creek mouth when the tide's coming out, right? Let's say the tide's dropping, you want to be on that side of that creek mouth. If the tide's coming in, you want to be on the opposite. It's just that simple. It's just like we talked about with the fish in the river. They want to point their nose into that current and let the food come to them. It's the same deal. Still finding a lot of redfish and speckled trout are going to be in the rivers still. And I expect for them to start moving out towards places like Dolphin Island and all that in really good numbers here directly. That's been a really good solid thing. Bass fishing on the Delta has been really good. And I think it's because we didn't get blown out this year. We didn't have a year where we just got flooded to death, which was good. And so it's kept fish in a little bit more reliable placements, and it's made them a little bit easier to deal with. A lot of people, we overlook the area south of the causeway, like right around where the mouth of the Blakely River is. All those areas, like if you were to draw a line from, let's say, the Hampton Inn and Daffney, right there on 98, and you would draw a line directly across the battleship. A lot of those grass flats can hold wonderful bass fishing. I'm pretty sure a lot of folks may remember when the Bassmasters Classic was held in Mobile. That was the area that those fish were caught out of, right through there.
Yeah, that used to actually be my stomping grounds right there. You talk about around the end there at Daphne. I used to could sit there and at May Day, depending on what the tide was doing, you could catch bass or you could catch specks right there in the grass.
I tell people all the time, the best part about Lower Delta is you can catch a bass, redfish, speckled trout, and a crappie in 4 successive casts in that area.
Yeah, that's the
You know,
truth.
places like Bay Minette Creek are going to be really good right now because you've got that water coming in that's fresh. It's coming from the upper part of Bay Minette Creek, and it's coming down into the Delta. Your feeder creeks have been really good right now. Structures, they've been holding really well. I'm not a big proponent of video game fishing, but it's a very effective way to fish if you've got your Panoptix in the whole nine yards. But I would say that right now the water temps haven't gotten so hot where fishing structure that's visible from the bank has become ineffective yet. I still say that's a really good way to go. Right now, when I'm bass fishing personally in the Delta, I'm throwing stuff like my swimming minnow patterns at a big paddle tail in the back. So what I'm doing is I'm casting that fly out, throwing underneath my arm, just working it as fast as I can. So basically, it's doing the same thing as you might do if you're waking a spinnerbait. And I'm just covering water as quick as I can. Once I've hooked that first fish in that area, then I work my way down the water column. So I might hook that first fish there in that area. I might set that fly rod down after I bring it to hand. And then I take a jig fly, like a Harry Potter or something like that, and work through there. So again, just like we talk about all the time, you and I, there's no real difference between ordinary bass fishing with your bait caster and with your fly rod. We're just using a different method of presenting an artificial lure to a fish. And it's just literally a difference in the way you're going to cast it and the way you're going to handle it. And I just really love the fact that with fly fishing, I've tied these flies. I've made them exactly what I want. I know they're going to be perfect every time, right? But at the same time, I'm going to strike out every now and then just like anybody else. But it really lets you fine-tune your presentations a lot. And I think also tying flies and understanding how they're going to act in the water makes you a better angler overall, because now you understand the lure you're using, the fly, in a way that you wouldn't really necessarily understand. You say your crankbait or your spinnerbait or whatever else. You know what I mean?
For sure. There's definitely that's something that I've gotten more into is the enjoyment of being able to customize every aspect of that fly. You can tie a little, even on something as simple as a woolly bugger, you can try a full tail, you can try a sparse tail, you can tie a long tail, bigger hackles, bigger body. You can really tinker with it until you get one that you feel like you got confidence in.
Right. Right, exactly. And that's one thing I love about it too. You can customize it. I mean, going back to the fly tying thing, you and I have had this discussion before. You know, how many times have you been down to the river or down to the pond and you said, "Man, boy, if I just had a lure that looked just like that, I'd have tore him up today." Right?
For
I'd
sure.
have tore him up today. I said, "You'd have tore him up today." So now I go home and I make that lure that looks exactly like it. But because we're fly fishing, it becomes called a fly.
Let me ask
Funny
you
little
this, and
world, huh?
this may be a conversation that we've also had before, but as it starts heating up, I always start seeing more bowfin in the water, and
I
I like
love a
fishing
bow.
for
My
bowfin.
God, I love them.
Man, I want to turn that would be my pet project if I had time for a pet project, was getting a recognized shoepick fishery down here in the Mobile Delta, because we got a bunch of them and they are fun, but I've never had any luck getting them on a fly. You got any secrets for
Yeah, the secret is you got to call me and let me know when you're going and we'll go together. That's the trick. That's the real secret. No, man, they eat the same stuff that they'd eat for ordinary tackle. You know, so like for me, if I'm fishing both them on conventional tackle, I love throwing a spinnerbait for them and I like throwing a Zoom fluke. Nothing special. So for that, I might throw something with that big paddle tail on the back to act like that spinnerbait. And then I might throw a deceiver that's going to act like that Zoom fluke. That's all there is to it, man. It's the same stuff. They're still there. You don't have to do like a wire bite guard or anything, but I do like telling folks, "Hey, man, maybe you might want to put like 20-pound fluoro on there just in case," because they can separate you from your flies. And just like every other time you fish for both ends, the more expensive the lure, the more desirable it is to that fish. If it's a good, solid $10-$15 lure, that's their favorite. So
That's
you just want to have a lot of flash in your flies, and I think that helps tremendously. I love bowfin because, God, they jump, they pull like all get out, and they're just an amazingly neat little fish.
well, ain't nothing little about some of them that I got up here. If you
No, no, no,
enjoy
no.
them,
They can get very big, that's for sure.
I've
They
got a
can get
place
pretty
up
big, that's a
here.
fact.
Yeah, I got a place where we can go sight fishing. You'll have to come up here and you'll have to show me how it's done. I know where they are. I just haven't been able to get them interested in a fly yet. So,
I just wish I had a good enough friend to call and invite me.
yeah. Well, we might have to make something work out that way. You might have to bring that
There you
Ginu
go.
and I'll pull you around and point, and you can cast, and we'll see what you can do with them.
There you go.
I'd like to listen to one strip a little drag on a click ball reel.
No, totally.
It's always good talking to you. I appreciate you taking time out of your day. I know you're in there running the shop, and Guiding. I know you're a man of many hats. If folks want to get in touch with you and find out more about fishing down on the Delta, or if they're here in town and they need some fly tackle, want to stop by your store, where's a good place to reach out to you at?
Man, the best way to reach out to us is you can definitely call the shop at 251-520-8975. You can stop by any time. We're open Wednesday through Saturday from 10 to 6. And then if I'm not here, Captain Ben is here. I do have to admit, I don't check my Facebook page as much as I should. So you're probably better off checking. If you want to send me a message that I'll see, Instagram is usually the easiest way to reach me as far as like social media wise. But the best thing in the world is give me a call. The store number is my cell phone number. So if I don't answer, then just shoot me a text.
There we go. Well, guys, y'all definitely check Peter out if y'all are down here on the Gulf Shores area. And Peter, I always appreciate having y'all. This week's episode has been brought to you by. Right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, don't forget to text that code ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Again, just text ALFFR, it's Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, to 779-345-2918. Subscribe to our email list and we'll send you the promo code via email. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Killer Dock. Combines durability, function, and design to uniquely upgrade your entire dock experience. Visit killerdock.com to see more. Also by Southeastern Pond Management. Since 1989, Southeastern Pond Management has been a leader in pond and lake management services. Schedule an obligation-free consultation today. Call 1-888-830-POND or info@sepond.com. Also brought to you by Fish Bites. Whether you're hitting the sand with set rig or fishing the flats and marshes for speckled trout, redfish, and flounder, Fish Bites has something for you. Check out the full line of scented saltwater and freshwater baits at fishbites.com.